Welcome to a special crossover episode of the AT Tapes and JAT Cast. I'm Lizzie Hibbard, and I'm the host of the AT Tapes.
And I'm Luke Donovan. I'm the host of JAT Cast. We are here in the Connect Hall on the 70th annual NATA Clinical Symposium and AT Expo with Hall of Fame inductee Dr. Chris Ingersoll. Dr. Ingersoll is an accomplished leader in health sciences and has contributed to the profession through his research, teaching, and professional service. Dr. Ingersoll was also a former editor-in-chief of the Journal of Athletic Training, and we are honored to have him here with us today on today's special podcast. Dr. Ingersoll, do you mind telling us about your background?
Sure. I started my career in athletic training at Marietta College, where I earned my bachelor's degree. It was an interesting time in athletic training education as, you know, approved programs were just beginning, and I was fortunate enough to be in one that was really connected to the profession and the future of the profession. I left there and had the opportunity to go to Indiana State University and met a number of mentors at Indiana State. And actually, that's where I became interested in research and writing, was as a graduate student at Indiana State. Then I had the opportunity to go to the University of Toledo and earn my PhD in biomechanics with the idea that I would be able to translate that into clinical research along the way. So that was that's my academic background.
So as I said before, you've clearly excelled in all three aspects of athletic training: your service, your teaching, your research. Can you describe what you did to develop that long, successful line of research? What sparked your interest first?
Well, I think that actually my interest in research started in a conversation with Ken Knight as a master's student, where I discussed, he had just written a paper, and he said we could get so much further with rehab and ACL if we could just get rid of the inhibition. And of course, I was, you know, 22 years old, and I said, well, why don't you just get rid of it? You know, it's kind of a naive question. And he said, yeah, if only it was that simple. And so that sort of became a mission to try to figure out how to fix that issue so that people could fully recover from ACL injuries at the time. My interest then expanded a little bit more into you know, muscle inhibition and neuromuscular function more generally, but that was the genesis of my interest in research.
Great.
So you have had a long career in research and academia, and as you think back on your career so far, is there one specific project that stands out to you, either in meaningfulness to the development of your career or your research line?
You know, I really couldn't pinpoint a single type of thing that did that. In fact, I think one of the most rewarding things about my career is the fullness of all the different projects that I've been involved with and all of the talented people that were involved in the research projects that I did. And so, you know, as you're building your research portfolio, I think it's really more like a slow and steady type of thing, more than like and some people have these monumental eureka moments in that. Mine was more slow and progressive, but I think it was really marked by the outstanding people that I had the opportunity to work with.
So over this career and all these people you've worked with and projects that you've done, how have you seen research in athletic training change over your career and sort of the direction we're going?
Research in athletic training has changed phenomenally in the time that I came in. And I think when I got my PhD, there was maybe a dozen or so individuals with PhDs, and maybe only a couple of those folks that had really even published in a known sports medicine journal at the time. So that's developed tremendously. I think the thing that I would notice most about the transition of research is the early folks, PhD trained folks, often were trained in you know, exercise science areas. And so a lot of the research in the early days was really done on normal individuals. Oftentimes the graduate students were the majority of the subject pool for that. And the transition over time now, where we have phenomenal clinical studies with hundreds of participants in that, where we're actually doing research that has a direct impact on clinical practice, that's been the most exciting thing. And in addition to doing those studies, you know, they're getting funded by federal agencies. They're their large-scale, multi-site research projects. Those, I think, are the things that are really moving the profession forward. So it's been really exciting to watch that develop over the years.
So kind of like you've talked about, the ultimate goal of research is for it to be implemented in clinical practice and for clinicians to use this information to better patient outcomes. So what are ways that you think we can better engage clinicians in the research process from beginning and building the questions to ultimately getting the information to the end user?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on the place and the people involved. But I think the students that are completing their formal education in athletic training are probably more prepared when they go into clinical practice to even think about those type of things. So I think you're going to see that grow just as a matter of the way we've been training individuals over time. But you know, in terms of getting clinicians involved, it's hard work, and it requires trust and respect amongst everybody involved. And I think there has to be some value for the clinician in order for them to be involved with that. So I think it's based on the place that you're working with, but it's hard work, and you need to be willing to roll up your sleeves and find out a way to make it work for everybody involved and have that value across all involved entities.
So you talked a little bit about some of the changes in education, and you've also seen a lot of change in athletic training education in your career. And as we're about to embark on another big change in professional education and post-professional education and what students do with that, how do you think research in athletic training is going to change and evolve or just look more different?
Yeah, well, most accurate prediction is it's going to change because, you know, a lot of the research in the past depended on some of the post-professional master's programs where a lot of that tended to happen and they were involved with that. So as those go away, I think that will change the landscape of who's involved. We have DAT programs that are developing. I don't think they're going to be generally as residential as the post-professional master's, so there may be a different kind of research that happens there. I think we have some really talented athletic trainers who have PhD students. I think that's going to be a really important ongoing process, and that's going to be a large part of the research that's developed in that area. But I think as we think of the post-professional education on the clinical side, I think there's opportunity there as well. And so we're seeing more and more residency programs that are starting to evolve, and I think a logical extension of that may be fellowships. So we're in the residency to develop the clinical expertise in a focused area. I think fellowships could follow up with that by actually having research engagement in that, much like you would see in the models for MDs when they do a fellowship. So I'm confident that we're going to find models that work. And I think the more different models that are engaged, the more powerful the model will be. And you know, it'll be immune to future changes because we'll find ways to get done the work that needs to be done.
In your opinion, what are the strategic priorities for athletic training in terms of research and research growth?
You know, I think that's a really difficult question. And I think to pick specific areas would be a bit of a challenge. In fact, my argument would be, I think what we need to do is promote a diversity of research and support the people that are doing those type of things. Because surface level research, in different areas, it is not going to contribute greatly to the improvement in clinical care. We have some people who are pretty engaged in areas of interest. I think, you know, you've got to get more than a couple layers deep to really handle the difficult questions and get at that information. So I believe that the scholars in our area are smart enough to figure out what's important to study, and we need to find ways to support them to do that. Now, there may be some organizational priorities or political priorities or things of that nature. I don't know exactly how to reconcile that part, but I think thinking right from the science perspective, I think we have a lot of good scholars in the area right now who are developing areas that have been ongoing or finding new areas to engage in. I think those will be the most exciting developments for the profession.
So my final question: what does it mean to be inducted in the NATA Hall of Fame?
Well, obviously to be identified by your peers for your work in the area is a tremendous honor. For me, it's kind of ironic that I've always felt like I got more out of the service that I provided to my profession than what I actually provided to the profession. So, you know, being recognized for the work that you did for them is a great reward for the work that you've done over the years. So it's very humbling and a great honor.
Well, thanks for joining us on this special edition of JAT Cast and AT Tapes. Once again, Dr. Ingersoll, congratulations on being inducted into the 2019 Hall of Fame for the NATA. Do you have any closing remarks?
Nope, just thank you for having me. I hope everyone enjoys the convention.
Thank you.
Thank you.